FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
We are back. We're starting late today on Tuesday, August 19th, but we've got the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp, with us. We're talking about oil prices, oil market, oil production. Big question. It's counterintuitive. Everything taking place in the petroleum markets now is counterintuitive, not the least of which is, how can it be peak driving season, mid-August, oil prices, gasoline prices are decreasing? Well, we're going to take a look at that question. We'll probably just have more questions for you, but we'll take a look and try to get an answer. Mickey, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing well, Carrie. And you?
Doing good. Watching the summer wind down and watching the gas prices go down with it.
Well, it obviously means that supply is exceeding demand, and I would venture to opine that U.S. driving is down. We've seen a relatively slow summer for oil prices. I'm looking right now, WTI fell below 95 bucks today. And like you say, it is counterintuitive. We did not speculate, in our monthly review about 2 weeks ago. It was counterintuitive that oil prices would be going down. With all the geopolitical turmoil in the world, and that turmoil being in oil-producing areas of the Middle East and Russia, Ukraine, et cetera. But obviously, something is going on. Since we last talked, I read a couple of articles, and it appears one of the reasons is the speculative parts of the market have left the market. And if you remember, the big banks, the too big to fail U.S. banks, made a decision earlier this year to move out of commodity speculation. Futures and options, they're getting out. So you don't have that speculative part of the market going on. And that is being promulgated as the reason oil prices are going down.
Yeah. So, you know, you can look at that and you can say that, you know, we learned something here, that the fact is that these markets really can get distorted and they really can actually affect prices and drive them up and really wind up costing us all more money. Right? Isn't that what it comes down to?
We all know that commodities markets are the most speculative in the world. And, I wouldn't necessarily say that the oil and gas market's the most speculative. I would probably adhere to the idea that silver is, because it's a much smaller market and can be easily moved up or down by big traders. Copper markets, very speculative. You know, I probably know more about the copper market than anything. And it amazes me sometimes the way on a daily basis the market can go up or down on very little news. We've seen net commercial shorts in the petroleum and oil business fall to about 3%. That's near a historic low. So you remove that speculation out of the market, and prices will behave better in supply-demand fundamental reasons. Read something recently that with all the geopolitical turmoil, wars, and unrest, and sabotage, and we've got the sanctions on Iran and the sanctions on Russia, there's been an idea that that's been removing 3.3 million barrels a day from production. With production of 90 million barrels a day worldwide, that's about 4%. Imagine what the prices would be if we didn't have all these disruptions in supply going on. It's a bit scary. And personally, I like high oil price. I don't mind high oil price. I don't mind high gasoline prices, because for me, and we all operate in our own individual interests, I don't drive that much. When I travel, I usually get on a plane and fly someplace. So gasoline prices don't affect me very much, but low oil prices do, because I speculate in oil and gas companies.
Well, the other thing is there's got to be high enough prices to ensure that they're going to make the necessary investments to keep producing, right? If they were only getting $40 a barrel, how many people would be investing in fracking wells? It wouldn't be profitable. This I know from Dr. Frankenstein. They got to be getting at least $50 a barrel to $60 a barrel to make fracking worthwhile.
Well, and, I would submit that probably that $50 gives you a zero net back. And we've seen that in the gas business. Every month I track oil rigs to gas rigs, and it correlates very well, with oil and gas ratio. Mm-hmm. And there's just no drilling for natural gas in the U.S. now, basically because we've oversupplied and we've outstripped our ability with infrastructure to take gas to market. So, we need, in my opinion, a plus or minus $100 barrel of price for the U.S. oil boom to continue. And it is continuing unabated right now. And I welcome that.
Yeah. I mean, 100% correct. And, if it sounds evil, these evil oil companies exploiting us, blah, 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 you got to get over that, because, cheap oil in easy to get places, although you did send me an excellent article about that, that there is some, it's just not to be found in today's world. It's just not there.
I mean, we found all the easy oil for the most part. We've exploited all the known seeps. And so we are now dependent on good old Yankee ingenuity. We've got 3D seismic now. We've got horizontal drilling. We've improved our fracking capabilities. Now, fracking is nothing new. It's been going on since the 1950s, perhaps earlier. Horizontal drilling is not new, but it's new and better technologies, which has created the oil boom in the U.S. We still got some geopolitical concerns in the U.S. We still can't readily export oil. We need to do that. We need to export light crude and import heavy crude, because that's where our refinery capacity lays. But, we've got the future looks very bright for the U.S. oil industry. We've created this onshore shale boom, and now that's moving offshore to the Gulf, and people are going in, especially Apache Corp and smaller independent EMPs are revisiting shallow Gulf, and doesn't cost a whole bundle of money to drill a shallow Gulf well. And so now we're taking this tremendous increase we've seen in onshore oil production, and we're moving shallow offshore Gulf of Mexico with it.
Yeah, that article was really an eye-opener, because, everyone thought that oil was exhausted, nothing to be found there. Let's keep going deeper and deeper and spending billions and billions more, not to mention those rigs, all the challenges, technological, environmental, that they present. And here these guys go back and say, wait a second, we apply enhanced recovery techniques, modern drilling, modern, exploration techniques, satellite and seismic. And look, we missed. There's billions of barrels there.
Well, I don't know that you missed it. A lot of times they knew it was there, but it was not extractable given technologies. But certainly some of it's been missed. It's interesting to know. It was interesting for me to find out that shallow Gulf production is less than half of what it was 10 years ago, about a little bit more than half a million barrel oil equivalents, BOEs, in 2013. I think that's going to change very quickly here. So, I am not a proponent of peak oil, and I never will be a proponent of peak oil. The world is awash in petroleum, and it's just a matter of a price, an attractive price, and the applications of new technologies. It's going to keep us going in the oil business for a long time.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, look how many times the U.S. Oil industry, Mickey, has been written off in the past. I mean, it's really a decade. Every decade, there's the Cassandras writing it off, right?
Well, and those are the Malthusians. And, I'm a cornucopian, so anybody that doesn't quite understand that can go to my website and read something I wrote probably about 3 years ago, and it's called "Has the Earth Ever Run Out of a Natural Resource?" and the short answer is yes. Once that I was able to find out, and that was bird guano. We exhausted that, but we found other sources of fertilizer in the world. And now we fix nitrogen out of the air to make urea, ammonium nitrate. As the cornucopian, we have plenty of oil, and it's just a matter of finding the ways to extract it. And whenever when supply does not meet demand and prices go up, and it creates new incentives for people to find and produce more oil. And we see this time and time again.
Yeah. And, it's all about the price, because if you can't get the price, then it really does act as an inhibition. It stifles creativity. It stifles innovation. And it really acts as a damper on production, and we see it over and over again. But once the price, the market, I guess is what I'm talking about, free market moves and acts as the incentive to get the market going, it never seems to fail in the long run anyway, right?
Right. We've got lots of geopolitical stuff going on in the world right now, and in the oil business, I saw finally the Mexican government has passed a legislation that's going in some way, shape, or form end the monopoly of Pemex. That oil and gas monopoly has existed since 1938. There's been some opinions that that's going to generate $1 trillion in foreign investment. And then meanwhile, we have the Ukrainians in their attempts to fight off the Russians. They've introduced new gas production taxes that will increase those payments 2 times, mm-hmm. which is designed to prop up the in-country oligarchs and alienate foreign investment. And so the U.S. Producers in Ukraine are fleeing that country. And, it's you just don't know what's going to hit the oil business, and once up one side and down the other. We have the Islamic State now, which is taking control of some significant oil fields, but in eastern Syria and northern Iraq, about 80,000 barrels a day, and the U.S. news has made a great to-do about how the Islamic State is taking over the Kurds, and that could be no further from the truth. The Kurds are doing fine. The regional Kurdish government is located north of these oil fields. Mm-hmm. But, even still, those sorts of ramifications we would have thought would have increased the price of oil, and it did for a couple of months. Oil went from a little less than $100 at the end of April, climbed to 106, and we're talking WTI. By the end of July, it's fallen below 100, and I'm looking right now, it's below $95 a barrel. So interesting times in the oil business.
And who could have ever predicted that, Mickey? If we talked about this, if we knew the events that were going to unfold and said, this is where oil's going to be you know, under $100 with all this insanity and chaos breaking out in the Middle East on August 19th, 2014, would you have ever said that the price per barrel of oil could be at $97, $96 a barrel? Any possibility?
Absolutely not. And Kerry, it's not 96 or 97 right now. As we speak, it's $94 and 56 cents. So it's dropped.
I didn't look today. I'm guilty.
A couple of bucks. Let's see. On New York Open this morning, the price of oil went from about almost $97 and took a dive, a waterfall, down to lost about a buck. And since in the last, 6 hours, almost 7 hours now, it's fallen to $94.60, more or less.
I looked at it this morning when I looked at gold prices and silver. I haven't looked at it since. My bad there.
Well, you obviously looked right before New York Open, or right after New York Open.
This
waterfall looks like, as I look closer to the chart, it looks like it happened about a little bit, maybe about 9:30 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So anyway, I wouldn't want to be long the oil market right now, and all those commercial shorts that went away probably wish they would have hung in for a while.
Oh my goodness! Wow.
We'll just take it as it goes. You know, our point is, one of the reasons I try to stay away from commodities predictions, especially with timelines, because you just never quite know what'll happen in the futures market.
No, you can't know. And look at the dollar. I mean, we follow that every single month, along with the euro, and the dollar is up to almost 82. It's at 81.89. And while it's not really the dollar index, not going to have much impact on the domestic production. It's definitely part of the equation. And, we're seeing the effect here for sure. It's all connected. And, then we were looking at what the majors are doing in this whole thing. And you sent me an interesting article about Shell realigning its domestic properties and making a major play for what's going on in the Marcellus shale in New York and Ohio, which is...
Well, that news quite surprised me, because Shell was kind of at the forefront of the shale gas era, which arguably started about 2005, but they were the big company, and ConocoPhillips was also involved, but Shell was probably the big boy on the block in this game, and they in the last month or so they exited their shale oil plays in Wyoming and Louisiana. Now, I'd probably be familiar with the Louisiana play that would be in probably around Shreveport in northwest Louisiana.
Oh, sure,
the Haynesville.
Right.
But I'm not really familiar with what they would have been doing in Wyoming, if that was. I could speculate that would be in western Wyoming, but that's pure speculation. And they moved into the Marcellus of Ohio and Pennsylvania, which I found quite interesting. Now, if you look at potential resources of shale oil, shale gas, the Marcellus, its potential is a couple of orders of magnitude greater than anything else we've got going on in the U.S. It stretches all the way through the Valley and Ridge Province from New York south, and it's just huge. So it was interesting to me that Shell has kind of reinvented itself in the shale gas, shale oil.
Yep, that was interesting, and it's unusual for majors to realign like that. It's billions of dollars,
Almost definitely. But, I obviously had willing buyers, and they made a corporate decision to do that. And we'll see how it all plays out.
Yeah. So they're seeing something in the Marcellus, aren't they?
Well, I think everybody sees something in the Marcellus, because it's so geographically extensive and it's so rich in in situ hydrocarbons. It's no real surprise to me that the Marcellus is viewed as the biggest target. It certainly is, but there's been certainly political considerations, especially in New York and Pennsylvania, about hydrofracking and horizontal drilling. And we haven't really seen those concerns too much in other parts of the country. Those other parts of the country, although Ohio and Pennsylvania and New York are kind of the heartland of where oil was first discovered and exploited. That was a long time ago, and so those areas have not seen the more recent activity generally that we saw in oil booms of, say, the 40s and 50s and 60s in the United States.
Yeah, but, you know, pretty much Pennsylvania's opened up. They imposed some environmental concerns because there were guys who were really, you know, they were abusive there. But Pennsylvania's okay. I mean, their standards are not unreasonable at all. They're really geared at just making sure that if you make a mess with your temporary pond for the wastewater, that you're going to clean it up, you know?
Well, it should be done. You know, this needs to be done in an environmentally conscious manner. And certainly there will be rogues out there that will try to skirt issues at times. But, you know, these are not new technologies. They're well proven. They're in my opinion, safe. And, you know, the idea that we're going to contaminate a bunch of shallow aquifers, I think, pseudoscience. Right. But certainly we want these things to be done in environmentally conscious manner.
Yeah. I mean, and the whole gas land, the gas coming out. But hey, if you want to flame me, send me your emails to khl@carrylutz.com. Mickey and I will take the time out to answer any reasonable question or concern about oil production, where it's heading. Don't ask us to predict numbers because the people with the supercomputers can't do it. The oil companies can't do it. The governments can't do it. Nobody can do it except some really good trend following cycle guys. They're pretty good at it. But outside of that, I can't see anybody, Mickey, who really has a clue where oil prices are headed. Like Einstein said about interest rates, he could have said it about oil prices too, right?
Absolutely.
On that note, find Mickey at mercenarygeologist.com and tell us your other sites, Mickey.
At Mercenary Geo, and this interview will be played in the rotation in its entirety, mercenarygeologist.fm.
Excellent. And just go over to financialsurvivalnetwork.com, sign up for a newsletter. My pledge, it will be reactivated by the end of the month. And make sure you check out the headlines. I mean, I got Stefan working overtime. We've got every important story on every site that you can imagine. I mean, he's got, Mickey, over 100 sites he's linking to every week. I mean, you just can't even believe what this guy does. You need to spend time there. It'll save you a lot of time jumping to sites. Trust me on that. We even link to your site, Mickey, especially. And hey, we will talk to you in a week and a half or so for the monthly market review. It's going to be a really interesting one, that's for sure, because we're sticking with volatility, right?
Absolutely. We embrace volatility and we want it to continue.
And we're getting it. So Mickey, hey, you be well. If I don't talk to you before the Labor Day holiday, enjoy it. And right after, we will have the monthly market review. And just get ready because, man, these markets were insane this month. So talk to you soon. Be well.
All right. Look forward to it, Carrie. Thanks.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.